Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Monday, 22nd of March, 2021. We have an interesting, sort of the market avoiding a panic on Friday, I guess is the headline, as you would call it, before trading was getting underway in the U.S. At least I think that's the timing. We had the Fed out announcing that it would not extend this rule suspension about banks' leverage ratios, the so-called supplemental leverage ratio, and the market was briefly panicked about that. We saw yields rising and spiking higher, and we saw the equity selling off, and then that just sort of all calmed down. And those quite familiar with the plumbing in the system, like Zoltan Pozsar, who was out saying it really wasn't a big deal, this SLR issue to begin with, very much proven right, at least in the near term, because this whole, the reaction to that quickly fizzled, and we saw basically an unchanged close. And you can see on our slide deck for today on the S&P 500, really interesting level that was touched. We mentioned it a couple of times, the 21-day moving average and the 38.2% retracement around 38.75. And that sets up a near-term a support level, pivot level. And below that, the 38 sort of 13 level, which is the next 61.8%. Retracement. But Peter, anything you saw? We've talked an awful lot recently about these really interesting patterns and divergences across different themes, different styles of investing, value versus momentum. Any further information value you can extract from a session like Friday's?
Yeah, you can see on slide two, I've put in an insert out of the themes that we are tracking, and I've sorted on months to date. So, and you can see the coloring there is flipped with what happened on Friday. So all the worst performing themes this month actually swung to become the best performing themes on Friday. So bubble stocks, gaming stocks, we've talked about with rich valuation. And then the flip side of that was, travel, commodities, emerging markets, etc. So maybe only India was sort of an outlier on that case. I mean, emerging market was down 1%, but our India best was up 2%. So that was a very healthy performance right there. But yeah, but otherwise, John, I think we are in we are range trading. We are in a divergent mode in terms of equities with the markets not creating a coherent synchronized theme. So there is the rising interest rate, which will create sort of a stop and go, I think, for a lot of technology pockets. And then you have the vaccine rollout, which definitely will turbocharge some activity that will be key for some industries. And we've talked a lot about Europe and Germany and the FTSE 100 being the best indices, if you will, for the cyclical, the bets on cyclical. I tend not to like to talk about value versus growth, because I think actually a lot of these factors can be derived in so many different ways that it's not even a concept that everyone agrees on what really is. So I think it's more healthy to talk about, you bet on cyclicals if you bet that if you believe the economic activity is going higher. So I think I would definitely encourage people to still look at the FTSE 100 and the DAX index for more momentum.
And I guess for growth, they might, according to Kathy Wood of ARK Investment, they ought to look for Tesla, where she slapped a $3,000 price on the stock over the weekend. It's a bit of our favorite stock to laugh at in some ways in these valuation arguments. But what's your take on that? And you've got a couple other interesting headlines on slide three.
Yeah, before we go to the ARK, their new lofty price target, I want to zoom in on what happened over the weekend. I think it already started on Friday. So there's this chatter that, the Chinese military is getting Tesla cars banned for now in China because of the suspicion that Tesla cars have, apparently they have a camera sitting inside the vehicle, and then they have a lot of cameras sitting on the outside trying to do this partially self-driving, feature that they want to sell. And the Chinese authorities or the military is worried that their software and the Tesla cars have been compromised and can be used as spying on people that have bought Teslas, and also in other ways that Tesla could cooperate with NSA or US authorities on personal information. And obviously Elon Musk has been out over the weekend saying that's absolutely ludicrous. We're not in any cooperation with the US government. We would never be so. And if this was the case, I mean, we could just as well shut down the company. So, but for now, there's friction in the Chinese market, which is very much important. And especially if we look at the bull case for ARK Invest, China needs to, sorry, and Tesla needs to own the Chinese market. And I still have my doubts about that. I don't think with the with the political trajectory of US-China tensions, I don't see how a US brand in such a key industry will be ever allowed to become a dominant player in the Chinese market. I just don't see it.
And there's plenty of Chinese competition as well. And I guess the key the key IP is in the batteries, and there's plenty of Chinese battery providers as well, as far as I understand.
Yeah, they have the company called Cattle, which is a very short name for a long name, Contemporary Amprix Technology Company or something like that. And they have some of the best battery technology out there. I will be writing a theme on energy storage. And I think this company, this Chinese company, Cattle, could become one of the top 20 companies in the world over the next 10 years, just like we have seen some of the semiconductor companies like Samsung and TSMC become some of the biggest companies in the world. I think this company will own the future of energy storage. I'm actually positive on that. But John, I've talked a long time. I just quickly want to round up this whole ARK Invest. So I've put in here on slide 3, you can see their bear and the bull case. And she puts out this, the 3,000 price target with Tesla, I think ending at 650 on Friday, the Friday close. And if you look at some of the numbers, so their range is between 5 and 10 million cars sold, and we are currently at 500,000, and the revenue will be between 234 and 367. And I just computed the median revenue target right there, and that means that Cathie would expect Tesla to grow consistently at 63% annualized growth rate on revenue over the next 5 years.
For the bear or the bull case, or just the median?
That's the median between those two. Okay. Yes, yeah, so it's very, very aggressive. I don't know what actually to say, because to me this seems like she's betting that that they are 5 years ahead, and despite the mounting competition, it won't make a dent for Tesla's business. And she's betting heavily on a huge autonomous business, as you can see on the bull case. And she's also betting, even not in a bull case, that Tesla apparently will become a pretty significant player in the US insurance business because of their access to data. I'm not so sure a little bit more finer detailed data makes that big a difference in insurance, but I could be totally wrong on that.
Very interesting stuff. And hey, it's bold. It's interesting. You're laying out your case. Let's see what happens. It's not everybody that wants to put that kind of, put their reputation risk on the line to that degree. Let's go over to you, Ola. We had, of course, on Friday, their weekly roundup from the CFTC on positioning across markets. And we were talking before the podcast about pretty interesting shifts in the Forex position. So take us through that, and take us through, what's the general feeling in the commodity space? Yeah, it looks to me like a couple of key commodities, of course, have suffered some pretty dramatic drawdowns over the last few sessions.
Absolutely, John. And if you just start off with the commodity space, it just looks like the whole sector got out the wrong side of the bed this morning in Asia. We are seeing losses across the board in metals, energy, and agriculture as well. And it's interesting on a day where we're not really seeing much in terms of reasons for behind it. The dollar is a tad stronger, something like less than 0.2% at this stage, so not a major move. At the same time, we got yields just drifting a bit lower here, which would be supported to the general risk level or risk appetite. So we're having a weak start to the week. Week obviously it's slightly worrying when you can't put a finger on what exactly is driving it. So it does indicate that we are still in for some risk reductions, and we saw that in the commodity space last week as well. If you look at slide 8 in today's deck, where we saw the we had this very elevated, and it was a record long just a few weeks ago, position across the three sectors, as you can see on the right hand side there, the accumulated positions. But generally, market were quite elevated, oil markets into last week's slump, and that's probably creating still some nervousness in the market that there might still be some long liquidation to be had. I think on the other hand, the OPEC Plus, they've fought tooth and nail to get the prices to these levels, so they will obviously continue to support the market if we see renewed weakness. But generally, it is on a weaker note. And why silver, as an example, is down nearly 3% at this stage, is another interesting one. So I think I'll just leave it there and then just indicate that we have a very long position across the board. It is having a somewhat negative impact as we get started on the week. And just on the there'll be more information on analysis.sachs, so I'll put out the weekly report, and you can also see some of the snapshots on my Twitter feed. But you returning to the dollar, and I think that could also give you a just tie over to what's happening in Turkey in general. But the dollar short has been quite elevated for a while. We hit a multi-year high back in late 2020, and even though the dollar has been strengthening as yields were going up, we haven't really seen much in terms of short covering. But that most certainly happened last week, as you can see on the chart there on slide six. The net short basically halved last week with a massive amount of selling in yen. It was the biggest weekly selling in yen in 10 years. So the market basically flipped from a yen long to a yen short. So for a change, plenty of stuff going on in the currency space, John.
Yeah, that shift coming, it's a bit tardy relative to the price action dollar yen. That's for sure. Quite interesting there. And quite interesting as well that we've seen the U.S. Treasury yields moderating, decently since the peak in yields on Thursday. And that hasn't really provided gold more sustainable support. So interesting, like you said, the head scratcher on silver and gold coming to this morning, although the dollar is quite firm across the board. And you can see that on our, and I'll get to the Turkey story in a moment, but on our, just on our FX board and trend evolution on slide five, you can see just a lot of the readings are kind of moderating across the board in terms of this trend strength and Eurodollar. Although the dollar is picking up a little bit, and Eurodollar poking into some interesting levels here, the 200-day moving average just below 118.60, and the actual range low was 118.36, I believe. So watching that, we broke below 120, and now we're waiting to see if we're going to follow lower to that more ultimate test of 115-116 support, or whether this break lower was a bit of a red herring. And I think a lot of that is bound up in what's going to happen with U.S. yields this week. We'll get to the calendar in a moment, but we have to briefly cover this dollar Turkish lira story. Very interesting at the weekend and after the the so-called bitter medicine man, the central banker who was applying orthodox traditional emerging market policies when your currency is disappearing into the abyss. You hike rates and you bring back credibility on that front, which he was tasked with doing late last year when appointed by Erdogan under this so-called bitter medicine regime. And it took the dollar try level from 8.5 all the way back down to 7, not even including all the tremendous carry one was earning on that trade. A rush of foreign capital and domestic capital, no doubt, as well, celebrating that move and stabilizing the currency. And then it touched that magic 7 level and just below. And then there was a weakening. And one suspects that Erdogan said, look, we're doing all these interest rate hikes, and yet we're back at 7.5 and above until last week. And then he fires the guy over the weekend. So we have a domestic and foreign actors concerned that they're losing all desire to follow the orthodox policy. The Erdogan may command massive reversals in these interest rate hikes. It's at 19% now. Who knows? It could go to 10% or below in quick order, given that the new guy appointed, so Kaftsiolu, I apologize for the pronunciation, criticized the former central banker Akbal and the whole regime of interest rate hikes to stabilize the currency, saying the economy needs more support. I don't know where this ends, but this is obviously a very risky business that they're involved in, a country with essentially no foreign reserves and really net negative foreign reserves if you look at how they've used swaps to essentially use dollars in the domestic banking system to support the currency. I don't know where this could end. It could end in something quite ugly. So, but the key point here is that it's specific to Turkey, and I don't think the market sees any contagion risk. We're not seeing any generalized unease across the emerging market space. Of course, that could change, but that's our assessment here. Let's watch what happens next. A very dicey situation for the Turkish lira. So, Peter, we've got a new week, we've got new earnings, and you've got a note on the IPO calendar, which is getting some interesting names popping up on that as well. It's an interesting week for equities, I suppose.
This week, we don't have any, so the news we got out this morning was from Deliveroo, which is a food delivery service. We have quite a few here in Europe, where Delivery Hero is probably the most prominent one listed on the German stock exchange. But Deliveroo's parent company called Roo Foods, as you can see in the insert here on slide 9, has priced its shares here in here this morning at a valuation close to around £8 billion pounds, and it's going to be the biggest IPO in London this year. And I think it's a sign that things are really gearing up now. We're seeing a lot of IPOs in the calendar, not only in Europe but also in the US and China. I've just put in top 10 here in Europe, and you can see some of the names. I mean, we also have Trustpilot, which actually is a Danish company, but they will list in London as well, half the size of Roo Foods. But then also you can see there, they're basically the three things that pops up on the IPO market. It's software companies in some way or shape, and it's biotechnology companies and something with green energy. And that's also what this top 10 IPO calendar is reflecting. And then the US, we know companies like Robinhood Trading is also filing for IPO, and that will heat up soon as well. And there's some interesting names in China. So I think we'll be talking more about big names in the IPO space. And I think that's typically could be a sign that some momentum, at least in some parts of the market, is accelerating.
All right. And then on your earnings calendar, you're pulling out that Adobe chart. And we've talked about Adobe before as one of these companies that's become essentially bond-like, a company that's able to continuously grow its earnings based on its subscriber base and pricing those cash flows almost like a bond. But then, of course, with this recent rise in U.S. yields, I guess that's the vast majority of the explainer of their share price dropping from above 500 to below 450 at times in recent weeks. An interesting test case for these all these valuation arguments, I suppose.
Yeah, it is. Adobe will report tomorrow. I don't think there is that many interesting companies reporting today. Maybe Tencent Music Entertainment for its angle on Apple Music and Spotify, if you will. It could be interesting to watch. But otherwise, it's a full week with China at its center. But coming back to Adobe, yeah, you're right. I mean, it's currently priced at a 2.5% free cash flow yield. Has been more richly valued at 3.5% previously, but then you know every single stock with the characteristics of Adobe, as you just mentioned, John, have been priced even more aggressively. But now with the 10-year moving higher and higher, I think that aggressiveness on your free cash flow yield is squeezing some of these stocks. And then Adobe's revenue growth rate is coming down every single year, so they are in the phase where you have a decay on the growth rate, and that's the key thing here to model. If you are an investor at Adobe, you have to model, where will the long term growth rate on the revenue side be for Adobe? Right now, it's around 15%. So I would still argue that if you get 2.5% free cash flow yield with something growing 15%, it's still pretty attractive given where the 10-year yield is in the U.S.
All right. And it's really a key week for focusing on U.S. yields after that recent rise. Have we capped things for now? We're going to see some consolidation. And a few interesting things on the calendar to note are the U.S. Treasury auctions. There's a 2-year up tomorrow. I would expect little drama around that one, but the 5-year gets more interesting on Wednesday. And let's recall, as we look at the 7-year on Thursday, that it was specifically a 7-year auction. That was the sort of proximate trigger of a lot of that treasury market, or not a lot, but that specific disorderly treasury market event we saw. I'm forgetting if it's 2 weeks ago. I think it was 2 weeks ago plus that really sparked the concern around U.S. yields accelerating higher. I don't suspect that the Powell and Yellen appearances will be particularly dramatic, but of course we'll have our ears tuned to that. More interesting, potentially, no guarantees, would be Clarida, what he has to say on Thursday, if there's any sort of longer term hint about concern about the scale of Treasury issuance and what the Fed, if anything, would do about that. But we'll save it for then. I think in the meantime, it's going to be interesting to see how yields just simply behave and whether the market is keying off that as it was so clearly last week, or if there are other bits and pieces that are moving and shaking the markets this week as we looked at those key technical levels in the big U.S. Indices. For now, we'll call it a day, and we'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call. Thanks for joining.